Today on Wings, the topic is a painful one. It's about rape and sexual abuse of young women and girls. The story is reported from Cameroon, West Africa, but sadly this kind of abuse and the insufficient response to it takes place all over the world.
The first stage of them healing is by talking about what happened to them.
How are we able to speak out when no one is ready to listen to us?
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
In Cameroon today, efforts to treat rape, less of a taboo topic, have been futile.
Patience Wingo is a journalist at Cameroon Radio and Television, who also produces radio for WINGS, Women's International News Gathering Service. She begins this program by letting young victims of sexual abuse tell their truth. The narratives had to be censored to comply with United States broadcasting laws. What remains is still disturbing, and some listeners may want to turn away.
The first time was with my uncle. I came for holidays in his house. That was 10 years ago. I was innocent. He raped me. I begged him to stop. He refused and told me he has the right to do whatever thing he wants on me. And he told me I have to go back to my parents. I did. I went back home. And when I explained to my mother what happened, I just explained what he did to me. I did not use the word sex. My uncle was a pastor, so my mom said it's not possible. And when I was 12 years old, I came back. This time around, I was conscious. I knew what sex was all about. The second time I came, he had a girlfriend, but the girl would not spend the night. When I came, he told me that anything he does, I shouldn't tell anybody. So I ran. I just met a girl on the street because I had nowhere to go to. I told her what happened. She took me. Actually, she did not know me, so she was scared. She said I cannot live with her. Since I had a family other than my uncle where I was, but I could not go to them because they used to remind me of what I said, that I wanted to tarnish my uncle's image. I want to spoil the family. I spent a night in her house, but the next day she gave me money to go back to my parents. When I met my mother, I explained to her what happened to me. She beat me up. I spoke to outsiders after a long time. Before talking to them, I felt like I didn't have a pride to protect. I was sleeping with any man who asked me out. And to an extent, I was getting into girls. It helped me in talking to them. The part of me thinking of committing suicide, that thought comes, but I can fight it.
My father told me don't ever bring a boyfriend to the house. And so one day, a friend of mine came to the house. My father, he became very angry and told me he warned me not to bring a boy to the house. So that night, he came to my room. He came to my room and said I should remove my dresses. I asked him why. He said I should just do as he says, even though he's going to kill me this evening. I did it because I removed my dresses. He pushed me on the bed and slept with me. I begged him. He warned me not to tell anybody. Every day he keeps on doing that. When all the little ones are going to bed, he will come to my room and sleep with me. I'm tired. I don't know who to talk to. I don't know where to go to. I just want to die. How come my own father be sleeping with me? I was still a virgin. I never slept with a boy before.
That was Comfort, who passed away on Monday, the 16th of November, after attempting suicide for succumbing to countless rape scenes by her very own father. She opened up in the aforementioned interview because her friend encouraged her to speak out to outsiders, since no one in her family ever believed her for saying that her father has been repeatedly raping her. Hear this narrative from one of the deceased friends who visited her in hospital a day before she died.
I went to the hospital and saw my friend. She wasn't very okay because from her tone, she told me she wanted to die. There was nothing left for her since her dad had taken everything she wanted. That was needless for her living because if her dad could rape her, then any other guy could rape her. From the look of things, she was really depressed because she could not smile, she could not eat. She was really pale, she was really looking sad. When I came back home, I called her. She didn't pick up. I sent her a message. Her elder sister replied and told me she was in a critical state. I waited for some time. At about midnight, I called again. She didn't pick up. Her elder sister told me she was at the ICU. And later in the night, her elder sister called. I was asleep. She said her condition was really bad, that she needed prayers and she wanted to see me, but it was very late for me to go to the hospital at that time. So Monday the 16th, I called again. She didn't pick up. Her elder sister picked the call and said she was on oxygen. At about 3:30 p.m. Cameroon time, her other sister called me and said she died. Her dad caused her death because she told me she was a virgin. She wanted to give it just to her husband. And when the dad raped her, she attempted suicide but didn't die at the moment. So she was taken to the hospital. She took a poisonous substance. And while in the hospital, even when the dad visits her, if nobody is around, the man sleeps with her.
Many young girls like Comfort have been dying and continue to die out of trauma and hopelessness. Many of the rape cases reported in Cameroon take the forms of incest, partner rape, and aggravated rape. Other victims of rape recount experiencing more than two rape cases.
I was always a very happy child. I had parents who loved me. My family loved me so much. And even though my mom was hardly at home because of her job, I was happy. I was happy until I was raped at a very tender age by a guy, really taller, very huge. And he was really of age. He was a Muslim. On that fateful day, my parents were not around. My sisters went to the farm. I was the youngest in the house, so they couldn't take me to the farm. So I stayed back home. Actually, it was someone close to the family came in the afternoon and just took me behind the house. Actually, by then, I thought we were just playing. Then he forced me. I couldn't even shout because he closed my mouth with his hands. It was such a painful experience. And then after that, he threatened me with a knife. I was scared, knowing that someone is out there who could kill me. He was like, if you tell anybody, uncle will kill you. So I was always like, he will surely kill me. I was scared. So I just had to grow up with all this pain in me. I actually thought I would never get raped again in my life. I thought I was fine. I thought I was going to be a strong girl. I was already building walls around myself to make sure that no one comes close to even have a chance to get to rape me again. I got to the university. There was this guy who was asking me. He said he wanted us to talk, and I had to go to his room. And I just feel like, okay, fine. If I don't go and talk with him, he'll keep on disturbing me like that. I said, okay, fine. Let me just go sit down, talk with him, and tell him, like, straight to his face that I don't want this relationship. I don't want him. But when I got there, we're just chatting. I told him I don't want him. I don't know if it's that he got mad about it or what. He played music at a very loud tune. Like, no matter how hard I cried, no one could even get me from outside. He locked the door. I struggled. I struggled, I fought with him. I tried all I could. I cried, kept on crying. I begged him. I did everything, possibly everything within my power. But he still did it. He raped me with no remorse. No remorse at all. Like I was just an animal. I haven't been able to even speak up. It's just because who would even believe me? Who would trust me? Who would think I'm telling the truth? All the blames will still be kept on me. They will be like, okay, why were you in his house? What were you doing in his house? Instead of looking at the problem, most people turn out to judge the victim. So how are we able to speak out when no one is ready to listen to us? It's really painful.
On Wings, this is coverage about the issue of rape in Cameroon from producer Patience Wingo, based in Yaoundé, the capital city. In addition to interviewing young women who live with the trauma of rape, she talked with two women in different fields who work on helping rape victims. One is a barrister who works on trying to get legal justice against rape perpetrators. But first, here is Patience Wingo's interview with Josephine Nsono, or with the family name first, as is the custom in Cameroon, Nsono Josephine. Nsono is the Gender and Child Protection Supervisor for the Cameroon Baptist Convention's Health Services Operation. Among other locations, they focus their activity in the Civil War-plagued west and northwest of Cameroon, where a conflict between the Francophone and Anglophone regions of the country has spiraled into out-of-control gang violence.
We have experienced an increase in the number of rape cases.
In the northwest region of Cameroon, where the Anglophone crisis has persisted for about 4 years now, the Gender and Child Protection Supervisor, Nsono Josephine, says the number of rape cases reported has increased following multiple cases of sexual violence. She talks about the types of cases reported at the center and what the center has been doing to encourage victims to denounce rapists.
Way back in 2010, when I started working with the CBC Health Services, we recorded a number of cases. That notwithstanding, we were able to denounce rapists and to bring to book defaulters or abusers and perpetrators, and working with the relevant authorities, justice was provided to those who were able to speak up and seek help. Not only that, we ensured to provide a holistic intervention to survivors, providing health care, providing mental and psychosocial support, and ensuring that for those whose cases resulted as a result of their inability to be financially viable and independent, we support them to access economic empowerment and sustainability in a way that will not cause them to be dependent on those who were violating them. Now, when it comes to those who are children, especially minors, it's not because they did something. Look at this 2-year-old child. Look at this 6 months, 8 months old baby that is raped. It's not because they needed something from someone and they were coerced. It's just that the rape culture has left a number of things to be occurring in our communities such that we need to speak out.
In Cameroon today, many victims of rape still have a problem of not opening up to those around them for them to share their stories.
I wouldn't really say it's the rape culture, but looking at the fact that the prevailing situation, beginning with the advent of the Anglophone crisis, or call it the sociopolitical situation that is plaguing the northwest and southwest regions, we have underscored a sharp increase in the number of rape cases. There are those ones that are recurrent. There are those who have been raped repeatedly because the violator has power over them. Power could be because of their position or because they belong to one warring faction or the other, and they command in that area. And so the number of cases have increased just so much that you really cannot stop but insist on ensuring that something should be done, and this something should be done by every stakeholder of the community. We are looking at stakeholders on the government, we are looking at stakeholders on the humanitarian bench, we are looking at stakeholders on the local communities, we are looking at stakeholders on the family level. Yes, we are looking at everyone who has a role to play to ensure that this repeated rape prevalence stop. And I'm really, really just pissed off with the whole thing. You know, when I want to talk about these cases, I feel so hurt. Look at the fact that this girl has been assaulted by the father, not only sexually, but equally physically. And at the point where he beats the child, ends up in death. Look at this minor who is raped and then ends up being pregnant and goes through the knife as early as 14, just so that the baby is pulled out of her belly. Those scenarios are just so, so overwhelming. And we are saying that rape is so rampant. At the level of the CBC Health Services, we provide holistic care. We run a one-stop shop center where every intervention that a survivor needs is provided, but for economic empowerment, that we do referrals for them to economically empowered. We provide medical care, we provide mental health and psychosocial support, we provide legal services to survivors, just so that survivors can be able to access all the necessary life-saving interventions. At a one-stop shop, we provide what we call protection. The protection is that they are able to access safe shelter temporarily, especially if their lives were in danger. And we run a community of practice that provides these services, and these people include every actor that you will want to see when it comes to services for survivors of rape.
The government of Cameroon still has a lot of work to do in helping rape victims see their rapist duly punished according to the legal framework in place. Gender advocate and barrister at law, Joy Chefu, explains the weaknesses of Cameroon's legal system when it comes to helping rape victims get justice against the perpetrators of rape.
I like to educate, to get them to know how they can be able to fight, how they can be able to seek redress before the courts. And most especially, I like to advocate and let parents know the role they have to play in the fight against rape. Because I'm not blaming any parent if their child is raped, but I think that if most parents are more involved in the lives of their children and if they watch out a little more, then some of the cases can be cut down. So it's all about sensitizing, educating and helping them seek redress with rape issues.
Have you had any recent activities in the fight against rape?
Actually, I'm glad that most people are taking interest in rape issues and more people are getting to talk about it, and we are actually normalizing these conversations. Recently, we've really had too many cases of rape, and during the International Day of the Girl Child, they were talking about the rights of a girl, and we had this platform, which was a live session with more than 200 viewers, and I was doing a question and answer session with this audience because they were actually asking questions about issues concerning rape. When I look at what is happening, I tell my audience that we have to take these conversations offline because most people find it easy to sit at the comfort of their rooms or their laptops and they say whatever they have to say. But if we bring these conversations offline, we talk about it with our spouses, we talk about it with our children and our family members, and then more can be done to cut down the numbers, I insist.
When you have the opportunity to talk to your audience, what exactly do you tell them? And what do you tell them concerning the law when it comes to rape?
What I tell my audience about rape, firstly, we have this mentality in Cameroon where we think that the victims of rape should be blamed and not the perpetrators of the act. And that has caused a lot of issues because given that already the victim lives with a kind of trauma and most of them are closed up, it causes them not to be able to live life to their fullness. So the first things I tell them is, as an individual, as an organization, as whoever, we have to be able to create safe spaces for victims of rape. We need to make ourselves first a safe space. What do I mean by safe space? You need to be open to listen to them without judging them, without putting the blame on them. I think that if most of us can do that, then most of these victims will come out and it's going to help them because the first stage of them healing is by talking about what happened to them. So if they can be able to come out and talk about what they experienced, then we can help them in many ways to completely heal from this. I talk about how to seek redress if you are a victim of rape or if you are a family member of someone who's been raped, the legal procedure, where to go to.
And so what are the steps if I were to report a rape case?
The first thing I advise people is immediately it happens, please run to maybe a hospital or a clinic, somewhere that you can get treated and also certified of the fact that you have been raped. Because a medical certificate will go a long way to help your case, to make your case better. You might not have the courage to report immediately, but without that certificate, it's going to make your case a little complicated. I'm not saying that you might not succeed, but it's going to make it a little complicated. And when you have a medical certificate, the next thing to do is to go to the nearest police station to report your case. And if you have witnesses, it is a plus. If you have people who can attest to the fact that this act was done, it is a plus. And when you report the case at a police station, then investigations are going to be opened. The other party is going to be convoked. They'll try to go into the details of the matter to know what actually transpired. And at the end of the day, if you don't reach an agreement at the police station, then the file will be sent further to court where there's going to be a full trial. And then you're going to have a verdict. And that is where I say that you need a medical certificate. You need maybe witnesses. You need something also that can make your case strong, because first of all, everyone is innocent before the law until proven guilty. So the fact that you rush to a court or a police station and report that someone has raped you doesn't necessarily mean that at the end of the day he's going to be convicted for that crime. So you need whatever it takes to make your case a good one.
The problem in our context is the fact that you make the effort and you report a case. But at the end of the day, the feedback you get from the institutions, whether from the court or from the police, the victims always end up getting discouraged. Why is it so? And tell me how fast a rape case can be handled at your level if it were to reach your court today.
There's one thing I always tell people who seek redress from justice, not just in the case of rape. I always tell them, please brace up yourself, be patient, and know that it might not take as fast as you want, but we might reach a point. Yes, you need to be patient because our justice system is slow. It's unfortunate, but it's the truth. And I'm going to tell you that now it's going to depend on where you find your case. There are police stations, there are courts in Cameroon where you don't have too many cases. So in those courts, obviously, you don't expect them to take the same length of time that is going to take in every other court. Like here in Yaoundé, during a criminal session, we have at least 100 files. And if you go to a village high court, you might not get 50 files. So you don't expect the judge to take the same length of time to produce you results. It's never going to be possible. And that is why advocates of rape are thinking that something should be done about cases of rape when it comes to court. Maybe it should be declared a national emergency or something. If a case of rape comes to court, every other file should not be treated the same. It should be treated maybe faster, because these victims, especially in cases where you have kids below 5 years old, it is a complete damage to their lives. People who are even older, they might be able to survive it. But when you look at most of the cases where the kids are below 5 years old, let me say, not even more than five, maybe from 9 years old downward, most of these children die after this. So it's not just an ordinary crime per se. And that is why I think that the way their cases are managed should not be the same as every ordinary felony.
Let's take the case of the urban area in Yaoundé.
Yeah.
Where you have many files, like you earlier mentioned. How long would it take for somebody to have a final word on a case?
Let me just start by saying that here, files are being adjourned in a month's time. So if your matter is heard today, then it might be adjourned in a month or in 2 months. So already you have to see that when you come to court during the first session, most of the time it's about identification of maybe the civil party or the opponent party. And after you have identification, if they have lawyers, then the lawyers will go further to enter appearances in court. And I'm not entirely blaming it on the judges, but I'm just saying that the whole system, maybe the fact that they have to go into investigation, or maybe the fact that the lawyers need to get themselves ready to hear the cases and then to plead their cases at the judges, or in the process of putting the file in a good state, I mean, after doing all the identification and every necessary thing for the file to be in a good state where the debate can go. Sometimes that alone will take 2 months, 3 months. And then before you go into the case proper, and then when you go into the debate now, it could take maybe one session, you could get the debate. Sometimes you'll still not be ready. You go to the next session, maybe that is already 4 months, and then before we actually hear. So I think that the lowest period of time where you can actually get a decision rendered on a rape issue is 6 months. That is in exceptional cases. Normally, it would take at least a year. I'm not trying to put the blame on anybody, but every party involved in this has a role to play.
Okay.
Yes. Maybe just the fact that one party is not present in court, maybe the person, the accused, is in prison and he had to be extracted and it was not done. It's something else. You cannot judge him in his absence. He's supposed to there. It's his right of defense. So everything being put together, we are already at least 6 months. To me, when it comes to rape, given that especially kids are involved and they are the victims who suffer more, the punishment is not good enough. And I think that that is one of the things that encourage the perpetrators to keep doing what they do. Because if the example is set on one person and the others are aware, it's going to be something else.
The sad fact is that while actors in the fight against rape try to seek ways to make things more favorable for rape victims, many rapists still parade the streets and stay in the comfort of their homes unpunished. Combating impunity for sexual violence, therefore, is necessary for punishing such crimes as well as providing redress for victims. Aware of these lapses, Cameroon's Minister of Women's Empowerment and the Family, Marie-Thérèse Benaoundoua, used the occasion of the 13th commemoration of the annual 16-day activism campaign to end gender-based violence under the theme "Unites to End Gender-Based Violence, Generation Equalities, Stands Against Rape," to call on partners to continue to support the efforts of government to make things right. And the troubling situation about rape and other forms of sexual violence was recently discussed in Parliament, with the Minister of Women's Empowerment taking to the rostrum to say what her ministry is doing to change the narrative.
I would like to tell you that my collaborators who are working in those regions are carrying out activities to address the issue of violence, rape, early pregnancies, and what have you in the Northwest and Southwest with the support of government and partners in development.
Cameroon's Minister of Women's Empowerment and the Family, Marie-Thérèse Abenaoundoua. This is Patience Wingo reporting for Wings in Cameroon.
Patience Wingo interviewed barrister and gender equality activist Joy Chefu, and before that Josephine Nsono, a child protection officer. The program began with Wingo's recordings of young women telling their experiences of rape. To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or visit wingsradio.org/WordPress. We also host a daily news feed at facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings thanks our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose series of Zoom salons can be found at maternalgifteconomymovement.org. I'm Wings Series producer Frida Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.